Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. My very special guest today is Bruce Wilcox. Bruce is with the Imperial Irrigation District, and he is the manager of Environmental and Salton Sea Programs. And we're going to be talking about the threats to the Salton Sea today and why that matters here in San Diego County, what can be done. And he's going to be giving us a sneak preview of the brand new Salton Sea Restoration and Renewable Energy Initiative that he's been working on. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's start by talking about why the Salton Sea is so important and what could happen if it dries up.
Well, the Salton Sea is important for quite a few reasons. One of the biggest reasons is it's probably the most important stopover point on the Pacific Migratory Flyway for birds, and it's one of the last remaining stopover points in Southern California, so it's amazingly important from a wildlife perspective. It's also important from at least two other areas. The economic impact of the Salton Sea drying up or portions of it drying up is huge to the agricultural industry. The Imperial Valley and Yuma and Coachella Valley probably are the largest producer of winter vegetables in the United States. So certainly if we have a lot of dust that damages crops, that's going to mean a big difference to the cost of vegetables all over the United States. And then finally, there's the health concerns. As the playa exposes, there's going to be more and more dust. We have an air quality mitigation program that we're working on, but we still will have dust coming off of the playa. And that's a serious health hazard, both from an asthma perspective, lung diseases.
Yeah, and that playa is the salty desert crust, and it contains, you know, some chemicals from agricultural runoff and other things that we really don't want to be breathing in.
That's exactly right. It has some potential toxics and a lot of salt.
For those not familiar, the Salton Sea is due east of here in Imperial Valley in the Colorado Desert, in Imperial Valley, just next door here. And the lake was once 400 square miles. It's shrunk to about 250 square miles right now. And unless some drastic actions are taken, it could go away entirely. So, Bruce, can you bring our listeners up to speed a little bit on the history of this? How did this lake get started? It is the largest lake in California, and it is currently a saltwater lake. Tell us a little bit about how it got started and how we've gotten to where we are today.
Sure. Over the geologic history, there have been lakes in the valley. Those lakes have evaporated and formed playas. The Salton Sea Trough is one of those playa areas. In early 1900s, about 1905, when they first started irrigation in the Imperial Valley, one of the gates at the Colorado River broke and caused the Colorado River to discharge into the Imperial Valley for a couple of years, and that filled it up to the 400 square miles you referenced.
So it was a broken canal that caused the lake we now know as the Salton Sea today.
It was. You hear it called an accidental lake a lot, and I guess that's true, but the geological history would suggest that there has been water in that area as it has been dry.
So in the 1940s and 50s, this was really a thriving recreational paradise. It was a haven for boaters and fishermen and kids at play. There were resorts that sprung up. And of course, it was a wonderful wildlife habitat and even still is today, with hundreds of species of birds that are found out there. But then it's begun to dry up, and it isn't just due to the drought. Can you explain some of the factors at play here?
Sure. One of the reasons that the sea is receding is because of the quantification settlement agreement water transfer between the three water agencies, IID, San Diego County Water Authority, and Coachella Valley Water District. That was part of a settlement back in 2003 to get California to live within its 4.4 million acre-feet allocation of Colorado River water. So in essence, that was a drought back in 2003. These were measures to control the drought, just like we're in now.
So as far as the role of San Diego, they were getting water from what, the Colorado River is part of that deal? Is that correct?
Yes, they get 200,000 acre-feet of water from the settlement agreement. Mm-hmm. It's not ramped up yet.
And that's water that used to go to the Salton Sea, so they basically were diverting it. And in trade, what is the city of San Diego doing to help protect the Salton Sea?
Well, when the water transfer deal was cut, the three water agencies agreed to pay somewhere in the neighborhood of $370 million for mitigation. That mitigation included things at the Salton Sea, air quality issues, fish issues, habitat issues, and issues in the valley itself.
And that mitigation money runs out in 2017, correct?
The mitigation money probably runs out in about 2023 or 2024. The state of California is contractually obligated to fund the mitigation.
So to be clear, so the mitigation payments from these three water agencies ends in 2017, and the money will actually run out somewhere around 2022, 2023. And then what happens?
Well, the mitigation water stops at the end of 2017, and that's a mitigation measure. The money for funding mitigation measures that IID implements runs out sometime around 2023, 2024, and then the state of California is contractually obligated to pay the difference or pay the remaining of the mitigation. The reason the mitigation water was delivered to the Salton Sea to start with is because when the QSA was approved by the IID board and others, the state of California had made a legislative promise to restore the Salton Sea, and we assumed by 2017 that would happen. So
the depression or recession came along, and suddenly there wasn't a huge amount of money flowing into or out of the state anymore. So where are we now? I understand that you've told me there are three types of actions being taken to help save the Salton Sea. Can you tell us what those are?
Well, there are a combination of three different kinds of actions, I think. The first is just the mitigation that we're doing now, the delivering of water to the Salton Sea that is kept the salinity trends where they were supposed to be. The real enemy to habitat at the Salton Sea isn't the elevation change. It's the salinity of the water, and we're getting close to that now.
And if it becomes too saline, doesn't even have to dry out. If it's too saline, we're talking about, you know, hundreds of bird species that could just die out, right? There's no other body of water that they land on during their migratory path out in that vast desert area.
That's correct. It's probably the most critical link on the Pacific Flyway that in Southern California that we know of.
Okay.
And when we get to about 60 parts per thousand, the fish population won't sustain, so the piscivorous birds or the fish-eating birds won't be there anymore. The sea will still have some kind of ecosystem to it, but as it gets saltier and saltier, it'll be more like the Great Salt Lake.
Okay, so there's the short-term mitigation, which includes some air quality elements and so forth. What about number two, which is the Salton Sea Authority restoration, a little bit longer-term restoration proposal?
The Salton Sea Authority is a joint powers authority. IID is a member of this, mm-hmm. of that authority, along with a lot of other folks. And they're putting together what we would call a longer-range restoration plan for the entire Salton Sea. A couple things to keep in mind about that plan. One, it isn't funded yet, and secondly, it's going to have to be a smaller sea.
Yeah, the state, I understand, initially was talking about it would take $9 billion to restore the Salton Sea, and of course, in this economy, that's pretty unrealistic to expect to get out of the legislature. So tell me about what this smaller scale plan would include.
Well, the smaller scale plan that the Salton Sea Authority is working on will include some kind of marine lake or recreational lake of some kind. Mm-hmm. It will include habitat around portions of the sea. It will include a center brine sink. Most of the plans include that. And it's coupled with the third point, leg of the stool, I guess, for Salton Sea restoration, and that is the Salton Sea Restoration and Renewable Energy Initiative.
We'll be talking about that very exciting prospect in a moment. But on the Salton Sea Authority, you've mentioned that it wouldn't take $9 billion that you're talking about. Instead of billions, you're talking about maybe tens of millions over some period of time, and that it could be done incrementally, correct?
I think that's the important part of this, yes. The getting a $9 billion bank fund isn't going to happen. So we need to look at an incremental approach. We can look at $10 million, $50 million a year for the next few years and build as much habitat as we can over that time frame. The other plans had a lot of berms in them across the center of the lake and other places that cost a lot of money up front. This way we can create habitat, deal with air quality issues in an incremental pattern over the next few years as the sea recedes.
Okay, now let's talk about what you've been working on that's going to be released, I understand, in the next couple of weeks. So listeners, this is a sneak preview here of the Salton Sea Restoration and Renewable Energy Initiative. How much renewable energy potential is there in the Salton Sea area?
Well, there could be upwards of 2,000 megawatts of renewable energy, geothermal energy, around the southeast corner of the Salton Sea.
And that's huge. I mean, we're talking about other massive-scale energy projects that don't produce a fraction of that much energy where we're seeing, you know, vast tracts of desert, billions of acres being bulldozed or proposed for it, for, say, desert solar and wind and so forth. And you could do it in geothermal. How much land use does it require to produce that much geothermal power?
Well, typically a geothermal plant contains a turbine, and that's probably a 20 to 25 acre site. It contains 4 to 6 wells, which are 3 to 4 acres each, and it contains the pipelines to connect those wells. And the wells are usually not more than a mile or a mile and a half apart.
So much, much, much smaller impact on the land. Obviously, there's some. There's a little bit of light disruption at night and so forth. But nowhere near, it sounds like, the massive environmental damage that we've seen from not only what we see from, say, a oil-based power plant or gas-based power plant, but also huge land use from even some renewables, like the desert solar projects, for example.
Yeah, much less of an impact.
Interesting. So tell us some more about this. How important is it to develop this geothermal resource? What does that mean for not only saving the Salton Sea, but also for America?
Well, we think that renewable energy needs to be accelerated in California and across the United States. We have serious issues with the amount of carbon dioxide we're putting into the atmosphere and just basic carbon. Geothermal plants are not completely non-emissive, but they don't have anywhere near the CO2 footprint.
So you think it's important to address the climate change or the CO2 emission problem?
I think it's very important. They're also what we call a base load power, and they don't have to have a backup generation of a natural gas plant or something else that produces even more CO2. And as we've already talked about, they're much more benign to the environment than some of the other
renewables. That's interesting, because over the weekend we saw the Public Utilities Commission approve a new energy rate plan that is going to force people to pay more for energy that's consumed during peak power periods like the afternoon. And the reason they gave is because, well, as we're shifting to renewables, wind produces most of the power at night and solar peaks just before noon. But in that mid-afternoon, we want people to use less. So you're saying that if we got our baseline power from geothermal instead, that that would not be a problem?
It would be much less of a problem. There's always some balancing mm-hmm. that has to go on, but it would be much less of a problem.
It would certainly make the grid more stable, too.
It would.
Okay, very important. How compatible is geothermal power with wildlife in your experience?
Well, we have the Salton Sea Sunny Bono National Wildlife Refuge is out amongst the geothermal plants that have been built there already. Part of the initiative planning that we've been working on is to develop habitat air quality mitigation that fits in around the geothermal plants. It takes into consideration that there's going to be a geothermal well over on that side and a power plant over on that side and a pipeline that connects the two. And if you can imagine, the type of habitat we're talking about building is a series of berms that would be flooded with water. One of those berms would have to be built for the pipeline. So we've got some synergy between the two projects, less berms that have to be built for the habitat.
Very good. Now, besides geothermal, I also understand that your proposal includes taking a look at something called saline gradient solar. How does that work?
Well, we're kind of excited about that. And this saline gradient solar ponds are essentially an impoundment area of 20 acres with different layers of water in them. And each layer of water has a slightly higher saline content than the one above it. So the lowest layer is almost supersaturated saline. And it's denser because it's heavier. It's got the salt in it, and it stays on the bottom. The sun shines down through the upper layers and heats that bottom layer, and you extract the heat or the energy from that water and spin a turbine and generate electricity. They're almost like a solar battery. You
wow.
could imagine you could let the sun shine on them all day, pull the power off at night if you needed it, pull the power off in the middle of the day if you needed it. Much less of an impact, we think, than some of the PV solar and some of those other programs. We're in the middle of experimenting with those down at the Salton Sea right now. We think they show a lot of promise.
Fascinating. Does it require very much water, by the way, for either the type of solar you're talking about or for the geothermal, for that matter?
Geothermal uses water, and IID has an industrial allocation of water for geothermal plants.
So that's covered.
That is covered. More geothermal plants, more water, though. I mean, there is a trade-off in all of this.
Yeah.
And the other piece from the saline gradient pond point of view is you could use seawater. You wouldn't have to use irrigation water for those. But one of the things we are looking at is how much do they evaporate because of the
heat. Can they use recycled water?
They could use recycled water. But I think we would probably look at recycled water as a better use for habitat, and then after it's used in the habitat, put it in the ponds. We have a finite amount of water to use, and we need to manage that in the ways we can and get multiple uses out of it by either the habitat. Each stage of the habitat will be slightly saltier or more saline, and different kinds of birds and different insects like those areas. And so you continue to use that water and cascade it from one to the next, then discharge it someplace else, and then discharge it to the Salton Sea.
That's all very exciting, Bruce. How optimistic are you that this plan could actually succeed, and what do you view as the chief impediments or potential impediments to it?
I am very optimistic that we will move forward with both a plan like this and a larger-scale restoration program. In the last year and a half, we've made a lot of progress towards that. And the IID board and our general manager have been very supportive. We've got a team of people working on it on our side that have done a lot of good work. I think the biggest impediment, and quite frankly, we don't have a choice. We're going to have to do something. The air quality impacts, if we don't do anything at the Salton Sea, are severe.
Yeah, and we should note that Imperial Valley already has some of the highest asthma rates in the nation. Childhood asthma rates there are staggering, and yet this could make it much, much worse and overflow. That same air would blow into San Diego County here as well as into parts of Arizona. So the potential scale of the harm is huge. I understand there's an economic dollar figure that's been estimated. If the Salton Sea were not restored, what would the economic impact be from all sources?
The Pacific Institute did a study about 6 or 8 months ago that suggested that the cost of not restoring the Salton Sea could be upwards of $70
billion. $70 billion. And that includes what, lost tourism and agriculture and what else?
Lost tourism, lost property values, health issues, damage to crops. It looks at all the potential economic impacts of not restoring the Salton Sea. $70 billion.
Yeah, and then, of course, loss of hundreds of species of birds, priceless.
Absolutely. That's not, other than from a visitor point of view, that's not calculated into that. And to the point of the birds, we have lost most of the wildlife or the wetland habitat in Southern California and the interior of Southern California. So there isn't really a way to put a cost on losing the Salton Sea from the birds' perspective.
So this is critical from a wildlife standpoint. Bruce, where will this report of yours be released? We're talking about the Salton Sea Restoration and Renewable Energy Initiative you're hearing a sneak preview of today. Bruce, where can people find a copy of that, and when will it be posted?
It will be posted sometime in July, and it will certainly be on IID's webpage.
That's the Imperial Irrigation District, and what is the website?
IID.com, and it'll be available there. We're also going to take it to the state of California. We've had some discussions with them already. It'll also be rolled into the Salton Sea Authority's plan.
What can listeners who care about this issue do to help assure that the Salton Sea will be preserved and restored?
Well, we've raised, I think, in the last year or so, the visibility of the Salton Sea has been raised a lot. And I think we need to continue that pressure. Folks need to talk to their congresspeople or their representatives. They need to come to Salton Sea Authority.
State legislators also?
State legislators and federal. The funding is going to have to come from both the state and the federal government.
Okay.
So there has to be a press, and people need to let their legislators know how important this is. We have, especially on our side of the mountain, not as many people to say how important it is. So the more people in Southern California and Arizona that want to either speak to their legislature about the economic or the air quality issues, or that are just lovers of wildlife and birds, need to talk to people and say, this is important to us. We need to have Prop 1 money, for instance, allocated to the Salton Sea. And we need to have a long-range funding program.
There you go. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Bruce Wilcox with the Imperial Irrigation District about the future of the Salton Sea. Bruce, I'm going to let you have the last word here. What else would you like our listeners on KNSJ to know that we haven't already mentioned?
I think the thing to do, or the thing that the listener should know, is that we need to keep the visibility up. We need to move forward with restoration programs. We need to have funding to do that. I think the other thing, though, quite honestly, that we need to do is manage expectations a little bit. It's very difficult to imagine the Salton Sea returning to what it was in the 1950s and 60s. But we can have a recreational lake at the Salton Sea, I think, and we can have habitat at the lake, and we can mitigate the air quality problems at the lake if we just can all get both the state and the federal government pulling in the same direction we are. And we've made a lot of progress in that in the last year, and I'm very confident that we're going to make some more. We've got people in our offices, for instance, that work all the time on this. They're some of the brightest people I've ever met, Jessica Lovecchio, Kelly Bishop, and others. And if they can't solve this problem, nobody can.
Very good. I want to thank you so much, Bruce, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you.